Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on and about the environment, our relationships with it, and impacts upon it. That's for sure. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson. Ryan Anderson from Summit Community Power Works checks in on their new bulk solar program. Today, they're celebrating the first installation of this current round, and she'll let us know how we can get involved.
Oh, fantastic. All that and some news about September. And the fact that it was the second warmest September for the contiguous U.S. on record, going back to 1895.
Ooh, our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. And joining us in the studio is Ryan Anderson with Summit Community Power Works. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you coming in for a check-in today because today's a little bit of a milestone for the bulk solar program. So tell us about today's happenings.
Yeah, so we're having our first install this afternoon. It's a pretty big system. We're at 14 kilowatts. And we're really excited. I can give another update as well, just in general about the program. So right now we have 150 surveys filled out. That's your first step if you want to get involved.
And that's for, I guess I should step back and say, so there's a current round of the bulk solar program. It started a few months ago.
Yes.
And it will run through the end of the year?
Yep, through the end of the year.
Great.
Yeah, so basically the way the program worked is we had a community steering committee come together and pick a solar installer. And then all you have to do is fill out the survey online and you'll be enrolled in the program, which means you're eligible for up to 20% off the cost of solar.
Fantastic.
You said this is a pretty big installation at 14 kilowatts. How many panels might that be?
Oof, I do not know that. Sorry.
But 14 kilowatts on a single home.
Yes. So the average install that we're looking at right now is going to be about 7 kilowatts.
Oh.
So this is about double that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And you have 150 people that have filled out the survey that are then expressing their interest in being part of this group that's kind of stewarded or shepherded through the solar installation process.
Yes, exactly. So we have 150 people who filled out that survey to express interest. And then the installer reaches out to those people and provides them with a preliminary proposal. And then they have a site visit. And about 100 participants have had that site visit or have it scheduled to come up in the next couple weeks. And in terms of contracts, we already have 22 people that are contracted to install.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're getting ready to do the installation. So we're pretty excited about that.
And that initial part of the process, filling out the survey and having a site visit, is all free, correct?
Yes. No obligation, no commitment, all free.
Okay. So what is the installation itself kind of like entail? You know, how disruptive might this be? How long does it take?
It's really not that disruptive. So they went up yesterday and they put racking up, and then today they're coming back through and putting on the panels, and then it'll be ready.
Seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, they need to do an inspection and have everything cleared up after that, but the panels will be up today.
Is there deadlines still associated with getting your information in or signing up or et cetera?
So all contracts have to be signed by the end of the year. In order to make sure that you have the best chance at getting the full 30% federal tax credit, you should fill out that survey ASAP. The 30% tax credit steps down to 26% for installs that are complete next year. So it's not that big of a change, especially when you're still getting that up to 20% off from the installer.
Okay. So, things don't have to be like built and installed by the end of this year. Just a contract has to be signed.
Yep.
Okay. And that includes what? The installer coming out and doing a survey at your home to determine even if you're eligible or if it makes sense.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So the installer will come out after you fill out that survey and take a look at your roof, make sure it's in good condition. They've been really honest with people, letting them know that if their roof is getting old, they might want to consider a replacement first. But because a lot of the installs are going to actually happen in the spring, as winter comes in, people do have a chance to still get a new roof and install solar through the program.
Okay. So how many did you say have signed up? And it was 20 or so?
Yeah, so 22 have contracted.
22 have contracted. Is that's within the Summit County area?
Yep. Summit County and Wasatch County.
And those are all residential units again?
Yep.
No commercial company. This is just for residential folks. Okay. So is that more than you thought? I mean, you get a sense. Is that really good or what?
Yeah, I think that it's really good for right now. We're going to see more contracts coming in as people get processed. We have surveys come in and big fluctuations. So we'll have big imports of lots of surveys. It takes the installer a little bit of time to get through all of those. So we tend to see these contracts coming in groups in bulk.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you say you're nearing the 1,000 house mark as a whole.
Yeah. So wow. Utah Clean Energy has run this program. This is the 6th time that we're doing it, and we're close to hitting our 1,000th install. We're also running a program in Salt Lake. So for any commuters, if you're interested, you can hear about that at empowerslcsolar.org. And between those two programs, we're about to hit that 1,000th install.
Okay.
Amazing.
So going back, the survey, like you say, gives an assessment as to whether it's feasible to do, but you also get it, obviously, as an estimate of the cost to install.
Yep.
And then from that point, you make the decision as to whether or not it's worthwhile for you to sign a contract.
Exactly. Right? So the installer, after you fill out that survey, and that survey just asks basic questions about how old your roof is, what type of roof you have, if you have shading, things like that. The installer will get that information and then use Google Images to send you a preliminary proposal and size your system based off your current energy use. Mm. And then you can take a look at that proposal. If it seems feasible, they'll come out to your house, verify that you're a good candidate, and then send you your final proposal.
And I always thought what was interesting about the surveys too is an assessment of your current electricity use, and it makes perhaps suggestions on how to reduce your electricity consumption first before you start to install panels, right? So look into the area of efficiency, reduce your consumption, and then figure out how many panels you need. So it helps just in that sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And find waste, you know, that might be going on in the home.
Yep. And the installer at that site visit will do a simple walkthrough and identify some quick areas of improvement for energy efficiency as well.
Okay. So how do people... Oh, I'm sorry.
So I wanted to ask you, we talked about kind of being honest about if it's a good site fit. And when we had the installer on with you guys at the beginning of the program, he said, you know, I'm not afraid to tell people, hey, you're not a great fit. You don't have the right sun angles, or there are, you know, too many close trees in this particular area. Your roof isn't the right fit. Have you had anybody that's experienced that so far in the program in this round?
Yeah, actually. So one of our steering committee members, Erin Bragg, she helped us select the installer, and she's going solar through this program right now. And she had the installer come out and take a look at her roof, and it wasn't in great condition and wasn't perfect for solar. And instead, they took a look at her, I think it's her garage that they looked at, and it was a lot better. And so she's doing it there instead.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. So where do people go online to get the survey?
Go online to www.scpwsolar.org, and then you'll see a link to take the survey. Fill that out as soon as you can. Another quick thing that we have coming up is we're going to be having a solar shindig on November 13th that we'll be doing some celebration, and the installer will be there and do free quotes on site. They'll also have free food from a food truck and giveaways. So that's a cool little party that we're excited to have.
Where will that be?
That will be at the Summit County Health Department building on Round Valley Drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
On November 13th, you can go to the website and get details and reminders of that.
Yep.
Okay. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations, 1,000.
Yeah, thank you.
1,000 homes, not just in Summit County, in the area.
Total.
Wasatch Back, Wasatch Front.
Yes.
Through Utah Clean Energy, other bulk solar programs in and around. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And here's to the first 1,000. How about that?
Right? Thank you.
It's just the first 1,000. So thanks so much for joining us. And again, we'll be in touch to get another update.
Sounds great.
In a few months.
Thank you. Right.
Thanks, Ryan.
We got a couple of stories, a calendar event item to cover. I thought I'd start with this, of course. Stoked by record dry conditions in the Southeast, last month was tied as the second warmest September in records for the contiguous U.S. going back to 1895. This is reported by NOAA last week. The month was on par with September 2015 and came in behind only the record warmth of September 1998. The heat was widespread, with no states significantly cooler than average. Five states had their hottest September on record. They included Colorado, Louisiana, New Mexico, Ohio, and Texas. Here in Utah, we were, I think we had like the 20th or 22nd warmest September on record. So well above average, right? So, and other, like I say, states like Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, and then states that had their, say, their second warmest included Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Kentucky, et cetera. So it was really warm throughout the entire contiguous U.S. And there wasn't any state that was necessarily cooler than average, let's say. So that was September. Here's something interesting. Evening temperatures were consistently high in many of the hardest hit areas. And we always talk about how, you know, it's not necessarily how warm it gets during the day. It's how warm it stays at night that really has an impact on ecology.
Right. It's not just the highest highs. It's the highest lows, essentially, that and impact the plants.
For example, the temperature at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport stayed at or above 72 degrees for the entire month.
That is wild.
For the entire month of September, it never fell below 72. The typical low, daily low, at the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport by the end of September is 62 degrees. So it was averaged 8 to 9 to 10 degrees above normal for average nighttime lows. So that was September. It seems to be a broken record, pretty much, that every month we have some type of record warmth.
We'll bring you record-breaking warmth or record-breaking extreme storms or occasionally record-breaking cold.
Occasionally, yes. Occasionally, but mostly record-breaking warmth, either within the U.S. or, more importantly, globally. And so we'll continue to follow that. Speaking of cold, during the month of September, they'd seen a preliminary total of 2,655 daily record highs broken or tied across the 50 states, compared to 85 daily record lows. That's a ratio of roughly 30 to 1, let's say.
31 to 1.
Okay, thank you for doing that really quick math now. Good job. So I was trying to be conservative, low, 30 to 1. But you get it. The ratio of record highs to record lows just continues to go up too.
Right.
And so that's the greenhouse gas effect. And that's our warming world. That's where we stand, and that's where we're headed. So that's the information on our warming world, let's say. So what else do we have? Do we have a calendar event or so?
Well, we wanted to take a little bit, just a minute to talk about the new exhibit that will be popping up on October 19th at the Natural History Museum of Utah in Salt Lake. And it's called Nature All Around Us. And it's about kind of meeting your neighbors and the bugs and the wildlife and the critters, the plants that are all around you, not just out in the wild and in the wilderness, but in maybe, you know, on your city block or on your, you know, suburban neighborhood street, and kind of how we can interact with those, things. And I have to say, I got a sneak peek of the exhibit a couple of weeks ago, and it is really cool. It's going to be really interactive and fun. There's some art, some experiential stuff, and then, of course, lots of science and nature.
So this is nature that's within, say, an urban setting that we may not otherwise observe or ignore in some form.
Right. And I think, you know, with more and more development, right, and more building, the nature that is all around us within our neighborhoods and our city blocks and streets is increasingly important. And so there are opportunities to create habitat right around us. And, you know, you don't have to be, 10 miles back in the wilderness to see nature. It is right here all around us. And there are, you know, birds and bugs and even some urban wildlife that are always all around us.
Anything surprise you about what you saw or what, you know, that maybe you weren't aware of
within the exhibit?
Insects or plants.
Well,
or
I have to say the text panels were not up yet.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't see that piece of it, but it is really impressive when you read kind of the research numbers about how heavily native species are impacted by what's planted in your yard. So if you have native species planted in your yard, you will have a significantly higher number of beneficial impact insects like that are native, as well as, you know, birds and other wildlife. So it has this kind of like huge impact, and it's something that you can do right at home.
Oh, here's an interesting one too. It's called a special don't weed it, eat it bar.
There you go.
Salad bar.
Yes, yes.
Where guests can learn how to make food creations from edible weeds found in their own backyard. Now, I know things like dandelions are edible.
Sure.
That's actually a bit of an industry of people eat dandelion salad, etc.
Yeah.
But can I eat like Dyer's Wood and Canadian thistle?
You don't want to eat either of those.
No.
But another one that people would recognize around this town is garlic mustard.
Ah.
It was brought in as an herb, so brought into this country.
So that and perhaps others that we may not be aware of that we could harvest.
That's right.
Don't mow that.
Right. Don't let it set seed and spread. But
oh, okay. All right. So
catch it before it goes to seed.
So that's at the Natural History Museum of Utah, and that starts Saturday, October 19th.
Correct.
At 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can go online to their website to get details on all that.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank our underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Vail Resorts, Epic Promise,
Rocky Mountain Power,
Jones Waldo Park City, Attorneys at Law,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
and of course, listeners like you.
You can always email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth, all one word, at kpcw.org.